If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering all the narratives that matter within college sports through conversations with those involved in college sports. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on any other platform, please make sure to go follow. We appreciate all the support. Also, go follow our socials at Not Even D2. A lot of content coming out of there. Definitely want to stay in touch. On today's episode, we have Daquan Davis. Daquan, a hooper for real. Arcadia's all-time leading scorer. And he broke that record in just 3 years, which is just crazy in itself. And final year of Arcadia, dealt with COVID. So he got his fifth year and transferred to Albany, which is also pretty cool. Just, you know, I'm from Albany, so I know a lot about that school and what he might have been going through. So it was like, as soon as I met him, we had this like connection. It was pretty cool. But now he's playing professionally, just finished his first season in Ireland, had a great year in Ireland. Something we'll talk about in a little bit, but Daquan's just a hooper. And this episode was pretty crazy because we recorded it like 2 hours before they were about to go play. So it was like, we just got in, got out. Daquan was working with us. So appreciate him, but there's a lot to talk about with Daquan. What you got to say?
Yeah, it was a great episode, man. I think, like you said, it was cool kind of getting to know him. Like you said, he played at U Albany, which is, you know, fire for you because you live right in that area. It's dope. And, you know, I go to school in Utica, which is like an hour and a half away. But I still like have friends like you and a couple other boys from Albany. So like to hear that connection was dope. But also just to like watch this game, bro. He's like, he's really tough. Like he's a 6'1", 6 foot guard. And he's the all time leading scorer at Arcadia, which is like crazy. I think he scored over 1,800 points, bro. So like, he's a skilled guard, and you got to respect, especially like those sub 6 foot one guards that can score like that, because it's that much tougher, especially at the Division I level, to get cups like that. So he's out there again, right? And just as someone who's a guard myself, like watching his game and his poise on the court, whether he has to, like he was talking about, fit in any type of role that he needs to fit into. So if he's a pass first point guard, he dishes it out and sets up the offense, or if he needs to score, right? And I think he really flourished in the TBT games, right? Like every time he stepped on the court, he did what he needed to do. In the scrimmage against Dayton, it wasn't filmed for anyone to see, but like he balled that game. I'm pretty sure he had plus 20, right? And those are all high major Division I guys that he's scoring against. Sweet Home Alabama, I don't think he played that much, but he still played well in my opinion. He'd probably say no. But then against Heartfire, he balled out again and he had, you know, a three to send it, to tie it going into Elam Ending, and then another three to put VRD3 up. So he's a really poised player, man, and it was really great talking to him, bro. This episode is definitely a vibe.
I agree. We always like the in-person. And what I wanted to talk about with Daquan is this is kind of like – it was kind of cool to see how his mindset, like, instantly translates the games, and, like, how he plays is how he lives at the same time. Like, he talked about, like, something he got from one of his coaches, never get too high, never get too low. And this helps Daquan in the games. I can see, like, just being able to stay ready. Like, doesn't matter if Quan plays 2 minutes or 30 minutes, he's ready for the moment. And I think this comes from, you know, a lot of success playing behind some Division I guards in high school. You got to be ready coming off the bench and just instant offense or instant defense, like you said, whatever role he's got to be ready for. And another thing that he talked about is just like being in the moment. So you talk about that TBT, like he was quiet the whole first half, most of the second half. And then the biggest moments of the game, it's like, it's Kwan time. Like, people in the stands next to us were saying, like, oh, I like that kid. Like, big-time players make big-time shots no matter the situation. And you can see a direct translation from his mindset and how that just helps him always be ready. And then another thing I wanted to talk about is, like, Kwan just got on the map with this, like people starting to know his name. And I think that his future is going to be so bright. Like, he played in the lower division in Ireland, had a great year, averaged like over 30. I saw on one of his mixtapes, he was averaging over 30. And like, this, that was his first year in the overseas. And I feel like this summer he's on a tear. Like, TBT, we just talked about, he's killing in that. And then now we're seeing on Instagram the Danny Rump Classic, which we talked about a little bit, but it's like, there's NBA guys, Isaiah Long, Markieff Morris, one of the Morris brothers, Trayvon Dubois, like a ton of hoopers there. And I'm watching Kwan and he might be the best player on the floor. And I'm not dragging that at all. Like, he can compete against those guys. He's been on a tear this summer. So, I mean, stay in tune for what Kwan got to say for sure. But anything else you want to add?
Yeah, nah, you're 100% right, bro. I think two more things that I want to add. I mean, to build off your point, like, I sent some of his film to my boy Griffin at Utica, right? I was like, bro, this is a perfect guard for you to watch, right? Someone that can fit any type of role, that can guard 94 feet, pass the ball, shoot, right? And he watched that film. He was like, appreciate you sending me his film, bro. Like, he's really tough, right? So that's one example. And then the second example, I think from all the experiences that Kwan has gone through, like, I think he could be a really good coach one day. Like, all honesty, like, he's experienced almost everything you can experience in basketball. Like, I think he talked to us a little bit more off air about, like, some of his times at UAlbany or even Arcadia. Like, the stuff always wasn't pretty for him, but he pushed through, he battled through everything. And like you said, he just stays solid no matter what. And honestly, as a hooper, but also as a person, you got to respect that and, you know, try to take from it.
I mean, you definitely just hit that on the head. Like, Kwan, he's been through a lot, and he was telling us, like, everything that he's been through, and it's actually pretty amazing that he's been able to keep going. But what's even more amazing is, as he's matured, it's always like, it was Kwan's fault why I didn't go right, or it was Kwan's fault why I didn't go Division I out of high school. It was Kwan's fault that I might have not been playing that much at UAlbany some games. And you can only respect a man that, like, just looks inwards when things are going wrong. It's so easy to point the finger at other people, but Kwan's a big guy, and, like, I wouldn't say blame yourself, but the first thing you got to look at is in the mirror, and it shows a lot when just talking to Kwan. Like, he's a very realist, and he said that in the episode, like, he's a realist. So, I mean, there's a ton we talk about with Kwan, you know, what the recruitment process out of high school was. You know, they won 2 state championships at Roman Catholic, and then Bond's like this bench player in between. Some games he's killing, some days he's got to take the back seat behind Division I guys. So what the recruit process was like for him, what made him enter the transfer portal, his process throughout his Arcadia career, there's a ton to talk about. And really, like, what he's learned about his game playing overseas and summer money tournament, any type of environment. There's a lot to cover with Kwan. He's a great energy and person. So enjoy the episode, and let's hear from Kwan.
All right, we are here with Daquan. How you feeling, bro?
I'm good, bro. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Yeah, I mean, definitely been wanting to get this one going. Super excited. I actually wanted to start just talking about this environment. You guys are a bunch of Division III guys. How's the experience been playing with all the guys so far and got a big game in a few hours?
I feel like the experience has been good. Unlike other teams, we've been here for a week straight practicing with each other. So I think it was a good time for us to kind of get to know each other, both on the court and off the court.
You were in the shirt a couple of days ago, the Danny Rumpf Classic. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but... Yeah, do you think, like, playing in, like, high-level competitions like that prepare you for these, like, million-dollar tournaments like that?
I definitely do. The Rump has been something that's been going on in the Philadelphia area every summer for quite a few, quite some time now.
Yeah.
And I just feel like ultimately playing against guys like that and guys that I grew up playing against all through high school and college at the Division I level ultimately helps you to prepare for big time tournaments like this.
So let's go back in time. You're from Philly.
Right.
And I was actually reading that your high school team, Roman Catholic, was actually like really dominant in the Philly area.
Right.
You and I were talking, you actually said that like everybody on your team besides you went Division I, you went Division III.
Right.
So I was wondering if you could just talk about your high school experience and kind of how that chip on your shoulder impacted you.
My high school experience was great. Like I said, one of those years we finished the season 12th in the country. So it was a really great season for us. While at Roman Catholic, we won 3 city championships, but we did win back-to-back championships when we won the Philadelphia Catholic League and we won state titles. So playing against those guys every day in practice ultimately prepared me for the next level, which was college for me. Seeing everyone go Division I and me having to go Division III, it was definitely a tough pill to swallow. But I mean, like I said, I had a small frame, kind of really played the 2-guard. And you know, being a smart enough player, I do know that it's hard for Division I coaches to recruit a guard that's 5'9", 5'10", and you know, kind of is just a spot-up shooter.
So I want to talk about that a little bit more. Like, clearly you're a great basketball player and you might have gotten a lot better, but do you think that you could have played Division I like right out of high school?
There's no doubt in my mind that I think that I could have played Division I basketball. I had a really good high school coach. I actually had two of them, Chris McNesby and Matt Griffin, 2 guys that I think, you know, prepared not only me but everyone that was in the program for the next level. And just going up against those guys every single day and watching those guys go high major, there was definitely no doubt in my mind that I could have played at that level against those guys or with those guys. But like I said, I just used that as fuel to the fire. And ultimately, I knew that playing against those guys every day in practice that I would be ready when I had to step foot into that D3 role.
Outside of basketball, I want you to talk about like just growing up in Philly. You know what I'm saying? We talked about how, you know, in private, how there's a lot of violence that goes on within the city. I think we talked about like Sam Sessoms and his little brother passing away. Rest in peace. So just talk about that, you know, growing up.
Philly is definitely a tough place to grow up in. Like I said, I feel like, you know, growing up in Philly, it's like kind of divided up into like 4 quadrants. You got like Mount Airy, North Philly, West Philly, and then South Philly. And I feel like a lot of the times we're like so split and so divided. But I do feel like, you know, with the Danny Runt, with Lonnie Young League and other little leagues like the Brotherly Love and things like that, it's slowly starting to bring the community together as one. But I mean, growing up in Philly is tough. I mean, that's where a lot of, you know, tough nose, gritty guards come out of, because you just, no one really cares about your name. It's like everywhere you go, every gym you have to step into, you have to bring your game every single time.
Word. So I imagine that because your high school team was so good, that there was always a ton of coaches at your guys' games 100%. Recruiting some of your teammates or even yourself. So I was kind of curious about your own recruitment process and why ultimately you decided Arcadia was the right spot.
I mean, like I said, if I'm being completely honest, coming out of high school, I had no Division I offers. I had some interest from D2s and things like that, but it was kind of tough because my senior year, I was kind of in between. Like, low majors would be interested, so maybe D2s kind of backed off. Mm-hmm. And then as the season kind of went on, D2s, once they realized Division I schools weren't offering me, they kind of came into the picture more. And Arcadia was a school, Justin Scott, and I had another coach, Omar Wells. They were kind of in my corner and kind of recruited me from my junior year and through my senior year. So once I kind of realized that I was going to have to take the D3 path for a little bit, I felt like that was the best place for me. Arcadia was also a school that, you know, was right up the street from where I live. So I knew it would also be a good opportunity for my family to continue to come to games and be able to see me play.
So your first year at Arcadia, you made the transition seem almost like pretty easy. You know, you averaged over 14 points a game in the MAC Commonwealth, which is a good Division III conference, and you won Rookie of the Year. So I was just wondering about your like feelings going to college, and previously we were talking about like this dog mentality.
Right.
How much of that do you think kind of impacted your freshman year winning Rookie of the Year?
I feel like growing up in Philly, like I said, having had that dog, you know, mentality, I feel like it definitely worked for me a lot and it helped me out a lot. I also want to give credit to the guys that I played against every day. Like, I played behind a really good point guard who ended up going to Penn State, Tom Carr. I feel like all the little things that he, you know, did against me in practice and all the little things that he taught me in the 3 years that I played with him were great and ultimately helped me to have, you know, easy success going into my first couple of years playing Division III basketball.
You talked about how you played with mostly Division I players, but now you're on a team with all D3 guys. So what was that like in just in terms of the skill levels that you've seen playing at a really high level
you know, high school team, but then going to Division III?
When you're younger, I feel like you get caught up in the levels. Like, you get caught up in the number, the one, the two, the three. 100%. But as you get older and as you move on, you realize that the game doesn't change. Like, basketball is forever basketball. Yeah. Even looking in a tournament like this, in the TBT tournament, you got guys in four or five different regions, seeded from one through eight, and you see so many number one seeds get knocked off. Even with us being the first, you know, D3 team in the TBT tournament to get a win in our last game, it doesn't matter what level you play at. Like, basketball is basketball. If you come in, guys around you got the right mentality, the right mindset, everything else will handle itself.
Word. So you started your Arcadia career Rookie of the Year. Next season, you win Matt Commonwealth Player of the Year. And then your third year, you end up breaking Arcadia's scoring record, which is just crazy. Scoring 1,500 points in 3 years is OD. Right. But I was just wondering if you could talk about what you were working on to continue to keep improving and be at the top of your game.
I would just say that, you know, like, I was very consistent in my approach every day. I was getting up every day, going to the gym two or three times a day, lifting two to three times a day. If I wasn't lifting twice, I was definitely doing calisthenic workouts on my own. But I had a really good friend, Lou, who was there every day for me. If I wanted to go to the gym two, three times, rather if it was early in the morning or late at night, he was always there to rebound for me. And he always believed in me. So, like, for me, if I had somebody like that that believed in me and was in my corner and knew I could take it to the next level, it ultimately just helped me and gave me that drive and that passion to just get up and keep doing it every single day.
You kind of talk about, too, like, being adaptable in any for any team that you're with, right? So talk about that. Just, you know, you're a spot-up shooter sometimes, or sometimes you're playing the one. You got to, you know, coach guys up and be a leader. So what is that adjustment like for you, and how do you go through
it? Like I said, when I was younger, it was definitely hard, you know, to kind of, you know, play so many different roles in so many different environments. And but I just feel like as I got older, I was put in a position where maybe I had to be a spot-up shooter in game. But maybe in practice every single day, I was guarding a starting point guard, like I said, tone card and things like that. So I was kind of get a mixture of both. Although when I was in high school, I didn't get to showcase both sides that I could play. I just feel like getting those reps every day in practice ultimately helped me to be ready when the time was called for me to maybe have to be the point guard on this day, or maybe have to be a spot up shooter. So I just think that's just the maturity and growth in me, or any player that, you know, will have to play multiple different, you know, roles. Like I said, you got to do what you, whatever the team needs you to do, you have to excel in that role and just continue to excel in it by any means necessary.
Is that something that you're, like, imploring in young guys that you might not know, even outside of players on your team, just in the Philly area, guys that you might, or younger guys that you might just know?
Absolutely. I would just definitely say, like, whatever team you end up on, whatever role the coach is asking you to play, just try to do that to the best of your ability. Like I said, there's going to be some games where you might need to be a spot-up shooter. There may be some games where you need to showcase that you could run a team. There may be even times where, you know, you might not be an offensive focal point and you just have to come in and play defense. Like, that's how I earned my minutes playing at Roman Catholic. Like, although I was a spot-up shooter, I had to pick up guys full court every single day in practice, in games, and stuff like that. So, ultimately, I would just tell young guys, like, whatever is going to get you on the court, do that and thrive in that role.
Something I definitely respect about you, even like from the first time we met, it seems like you're always positive and like a good energy. So I was just wondering if there was any specific reason or person that, like, why you are that way, and not try to, like, get too, you said earlier, like, never get too down, never get too low.
Well, I had, like I said, I had great coaches growing up all throughout high school, all throughout college. And I had a coach named Justin Scott, who's at St. Joe's now. He coached me at Arcadia. And one of the things that he said to me, it was probably, he said it to the whole team, actually, my freshman year, it was never get too high in the wins and too low in the losses. And that was kind of a point to just, like, stay level-headed. No matter what you're going through, just try to stay positive, because everyone is going through something. When you're in between those four lines, there's nothing that you can do to fix all the outside stuff that's going on. So just try to lock in and focus on what you're, like, living in the moment. Like, I also had another coach named Dwayne Killens at Albany. He had a slogan that he would just say every day, just, like, try to live in the moment. Anything that you can't fix, or anything that's going on outside of these four lines in the 2 or 3 hours that you're at practice, don't focus on it, because there's nothing that you can do about it.
Yeah. So I want to talk about something that, you know, you guys won a conference championship at Arcadia.
Right.
And you guys went to the NCAA tournament. So what was that experience like, being able to play in the NCAA tournament?
It was definitely a great experience. Like I said, that championship that we won in 2018, 2019, that was the first championship in school history. So that feeling was great.
Legendary.
Like I said, we were just, like, so locked in as a team. Everyone was locked in the scout. When the other team came down and they were calling their plays, we were calling their plays too. It almost, like, had them shook in a sense. And that was probably, like, the first championship game that I ever been a part of in which everyone on the team got in the game. So it was a great feeling.
Word. So I mentioned you scored 1,500 points in 3 years, but your fourth year was during, like, COVID. It was a shortened season. You guys only played, like, I think 11 games that year.
Yeah, 11 games, yep.
So what was that like for you? And, like, were you kind of like, damn, I really wanted my senior year? Or did you kind of see the positive in that?
It was a little bit of both. It was tough, like, going into senior year, ultimately not even knowing if you're going to get the year back to start off with. So it was kind of tough thinking that I was going into the season only having possibly 10 or 11 more games, hoping that we get to the playoffs to extend our season. It was definitely tough. But the outcome of now being able to get the year back and starting to get recruited by Division I schools, I kind of looked at the positive side of it. So it was kind of fun. It was tough going through COVID year, not having any fans, maybe not having as many trainers around as you're used to with COVID and things like that. But I just feel like going through all those tough things, like, really prepared me for what was coming next.
You ended up committing to Albany, which we're going to talk a lot about. But I was curious, after your 3 years, were there people in your corner or surrounded, like, in your family saying you should probably enter the portal? Or what was that experience?
I'm going to be honest, I didn't really have many people guiding me and telling me, oh, maybe you should stay, or maybe you know, should enter the portal. A lot of that stuff was, like, really on me. And like I said, I had a drive to always play Division I basketball ever since I graduated high school and things like that. So once I realized I had the opportunity, like I said, I just had to make the most of it. I had to just stay consistent every single day in my approach and what I was doing. And I knew that ultimately, if, you know, I was willing and deserving of it, and if it was the right place for me, God was going to make it happen for me for sure.
This would be one of the last questions before we head to break. You committed to Albany, and obviously I wasn't the only school interested in Daquan. So if you could just talk a little about that recruitment process, right, and ultimately why Albany was the one.
That recruitment process was a little bit tough. Like I said, I was still in the process of trying to finish up my degree. I did commit to North Texas. But once, you know, that didn't happen, like I said, I sat out for a year at Arcadia. I finished up my degree and I started to get kind of, you know, a couple high majors, a lot of mid-major interests and things like that. But like I said, I had a high school coach who was at Roman Catholic with me. He coached me for 1 year there before he ended up getting a coaching job at Albany. So once Albany kind of came into the picture, I kind of felt like that was the best place for me. It was home. Everyone up there was family oriented. And then, like I said, I felt at home because my old high school coach was up there.
Yeah. Word. That's actually pretty interesting. You said, like, you finished your degree, so you took a gap year.
Absolutely.
That makes me wonder, because Division I coaches, they're not going to, like,
sit around and wait,
or,
right,
like, absolutely, wait the whole time for you. So did you notice any schools, like, pulling away from you, or was the recruitment like, no, we really want you?
I'm going to be honest. Albany was one of the schools, which is another reason why I went there. They stuck with me going through the process of me having to finish my degree and things like that. So that was another reason why I went there. But absolutely, like you said, coaches don't really have time to sit around and wait. And it was no knock on me, on my game, or, like I said, it was just the situation that was at hand. I wasn't going to be able to go to some of these schools right away. And, I mean, like I said, coaches and programs have to do what's best for them. It's the next man up. If one guy can't get the job done, it's got to be the next guy.
Was any part of you, like, anxious to get, like, that decision done or finish that year? Like, or are you just putting your trust in God at that point?
I definitely put my trust in God. A lot of things that, you know, I do in life, I definitely put all of that trust and faith in God for sure. But I was definitely anxious. Like I said, being somebody who always wanted to play Division I basketball and came out and had to go play 3 years of Division III. Like I said, when that time came and I realized, like, hey, this can be a lifestyle for me, I was definitely anxious.
Yeah. Word. So it's a great answer, and we got a lot more to talk about. Absolutely. Stay with us. We're going to come back talking about you committing and playing in my hometown.
And we're back. So, you know, one thing that, you know, we always ask in any Division III player that makes that Division I jump is, you know, how those summer workouts go. Because, you know, at Division III, if you want to be a high-level player, right, you got to work out in the summers regardless. But in Division I, like, you're actually heading up to the school for a set amount of weeks and, like, working out, working with the strength coaches, working with your assistant coaches and head coaches. What's it like for you?
It was definitely a huge adjustment because, like you said, at the Division III level, you kind of don't get started workouts till when the season is about to start around, like, October or November. But, I mean, like I said, I always had good guys in my corner, like Tone Carr, another really good friend of mine, Paul Newman and Lamar Stevens, are guys that were always in my corner. And, like I said, they all went to play at the Division I level, so when they would come home for the short stint that they did before going back up to school in the summertime, I will always be in the gym with them, constantly working and things like that. So, like I said, when I made that jump from D3 to D1 and now I was in the position of having to go up to school early and going to those workouts. I would say the first couple weeks, well, I would say like the first week of it was definitely tough. It was all adjustment. So me adjusting and me getting used to having to do the extra running that maybe I wasn't used to at the Division III level, it was definitely tough. But I had a great group of guys that was up there. I had a great coaching staff that was on us every day. And although it was tough, it became fun. Like, we started to embrace the grind every single day.
Yeah.
So after the first week, it just became like clockwork. We were running over and over. Everything became fun.
Moving on into the season, like the first few games, like the first two games, I think you had double digits, and then like the fourth game of the year, you had 32 points. So now that you've had those big games, I imagine you're feeling like, yeah, this is kind of like my team. I'm about to go crazy the rest of the year. But looking through that year, you had some games where you'd only play like 4 minutes, right, 5 minutes, get one shot attempt throughout the game.
Yep.
So I was wondering kind of if you could talk about this season and why that the minute fluctuation happened and what you learned from this past season.
I learned a lot. It was tough for, you know, everybody. We were going through a lot up there. We didn't have a home gym. So a lot of the times we were traveling to other places for practice and things like that. And then we didn't have a home game. But for me personally, I feel like started off the season strong because, like I said, my approach was very consistent. I was, you know, going to the gym every single day and things like that. And then for me, like I said, it was also a learning experience because some of those games where I didn't play as many minutes as I did the other game, I had to kind of sit back and kind of ask myself, like, hey, why aren't you playing as much as you were at the beginning of the season and things like that? And, like, I'm a realist. I feel like I had to get better on the defensive end. My communication probably dropped. And I mean, if I'm being very honest with myself and to everybody else out there, I probably just got caught up into, all right, everything's going great right now. Everything's going great. And I kind of had to reel it back in. And thanks to my coach and, you know, the players and everybody else that was on the staff up there, they kind of helped me realize that, you know, there's more to the game than just scoring. Not to say that I didn't know that, but they actually, like, put me in my place, in my position, and realize, like, hey, if you're not going to bring more to this team than, you know, scoring and communicating on the defensive end,
it's going to be tough for you to get in, not even just at the Division I level,
even at the pro level. Like, being a point guard, you have to be constantly talking. Like, even here for D3, like, the coaches here, they say, like, if you have good energy and you can bring it every single day, you have to do it. Like, you have to control the controllables. And, like, you can't control, you know, a shot going in or, you know, team winning every game, but what you can control is, you know, effort and energy, trying hard on the defensive end, making sure guys around you are talking when things aren't going so well. So, like, although I did have a rocky road at Albany, I felt like I did learn a lot that helped me to, you know, where I am now.
You talked about having like a rocky road, but and you were also like a graduate student, and you're like an older guy on the team. So, you know, in your own journey and own struggle, in your own struggles, were you still able to like help out any of the younger guys on the team?
I feel like I was able to help out a couple of the younger guys on the team, you know, with my mental.
Yeah.
And like I said, with them respecting how much hard work I put in to make that jump from D3 to D1, because that's hard. Yeah. Not a lot of people are you know, able to make that jump. Yeah. But if I'm being honest, I was in a state of mind of which I only had 1 year to like figure it all out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't have multiple years where I could say, oh, if I struggle this year, I'll get to come back. So in a sense, I was kind of, you know, caught up into my own self, not in a bad way, but like just trying to figure it out, going through the ups and downs and stuff like that. But there's one guy on the team that I really felt like I could have took under my wing, is Marcus Jackson. I know you know him. He's from your hometown and stuff like that. But I learned a lot from him. And he was only a freshman coming in at the time. But, like, his approach, he stayed the same every single day. Where there were some games where he didn't touch the floor. There were some games where he played 5 or 10 minutes. And his mindset and how he approached every single day ultimately helped him get on the floor as a freshman.
So. Yeah,
I definitely respect that. Shout out to Marcus Jackson.
100%.
Yeah. So, I know this, and a lot of people know that, like, Albany is a big party school.
Right.
Being from there, you kind of, like, just being around it, you know, like, they have 3 a.m. block parties, stuff
right.
like that.
It's not wrong about that. No, I'm serious.
And so you're scoring, like, 32 points on national television. I imagine, like, people around the school starting to know who you are.
Yep.
What was that experience like for you being, like, the guy at a certain point, and how did you kind of deal with that, being going to a big party school like UAlb?
That experience was fun. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it all started in high school. I went to a really good high school team too, and which
were really good, and we kind
of had like a lot of attention surrounding us. So going up there and having those, you know, good games at the beginning of the season and kind of having everyone on your back and supportive of you, I didn't like
really let that go to my head or anything. I just kind of took every single, like, every day as one day at a time. Yep. So.
Yeah.
It was definitely fun, though, not gonna lie. Especially coming from a Division III school where the population isn't really that big, going to Albany where there's so many more different people. It's so much more diverse, and it was a lot. We can't get into a lot of this stuff. You know,
nah, Albany's definitely it's a fun spot, man. Beer Garden, Lionheart, I'm already knowing.
Saratoga Springs. Oh, man. So if you're getting bored in Albany, Saratoga is where you got to go.
So talking about one of your 30 balls, just looking at, you know, your box scores from different games, that was against St. Joe's, and that's a, you know, I don't know if I could say legendary Philly school. It could be, but you're playing back home in front of the fam. It, you know, was that game circled on your calendar?
I would definitely say that game was definitely circled on my calendar. When I was at Arcadia, I want to say my junior year, we actually got to play St. Joe's in an exhibition. Now being at Albany and playing on a Division I level, that game was like very meaningful. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the exhibition wasn't, but now this game was meaningful. I got a chance to come back home after being up school for a while to play in front of not only my family but my friends and stuff like that. So it was definitely a game that was circled on my calendar.
Yeah. Looking through your Albany schedule, you guys played against Providence, Big East school. You played against Virginia, ACC school. And not to say you had bad games, but it might have not been like the 30 ball that you might have had earlier. So I was wondering if, after those games where you might have played like below 10 minutes, were you kind of in your head thinking like, damn, I was just playing in front of so many eyes and I wasted my opportunity? If you could talk about
that. It's a wasted opportunity. Like I said, I've learned a lot from that. And although I had, you know, ups and downs, I had a great coach who was there, who was always in our corner, and he helped us. Like, he taught me a lot. And I knew that a lot of the reasons why I wasn't getting in the game was solely based off me. Some of the things that I started to do or my approach to the game and stuff like that. So I would never be a person to, you know, sit back and kind of, you know, blame the coaching staff or blame the next man or, you know, kind of just be mad or be malicious about the guy that's playing in front of me. Like I said, I had a coach who used to say it all the time. Like, when you feel like things aren't going right or going your way, the first thing you have to do is look in the mirror. Like, you have to check yourself.
Year and you average 8.4 points per game at Albany, and you 36% from the field, 35% from three. So what did the, you know, overseas, you know, interest look like for you, and talk us through that process?
Overseas process was very interesting. Like I said, started off at a D3 school, and you know it's hard for, you know, any Division III guy to get a pro contract anywhere. Facts. So for me, it was definitely tough. I mean, I did what I had to do at the Division III level. Going up, like you said, only averaged 8 points. Percentages weren't really, you know, high or jumping out to any agent trying to get you somewhere. So it was definitely a process. It was definitely tough. Ended up in a lower league based upon, you know, my resume and what I did leading up to there. So I wouldn't say, you know, I was in the wrong place, because I feel like God doesn't put you in a place that you're not supposed to be in, or a place that you can't get yourself out of. But it was definitely a tough process, given the fact that I started my career at Division III, and then once I made that jump to play against Division I guys, and ultimately guys that I would play against professionally overseas or whatever the case may be, like, I had to step my game up.
Do you feel like sometimes when it comes to Division I opportunities or even overseas opportunities, it comes down to just what eyes are on you and who sees you?
I do. I'm a big believer of being able to get opportunity. Opportunity is very huge. But with opportunity comes preparation. Like, you have to be prepared for those moments. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, but I'm a big believer of, if you just put the work in every day, you stay true to yourself, stay true to God, it'll definitely happen when it's supposed to happen.
One thing that I definitely respect about you, bro, is like, even through this interview, you never blamed somebody else. Daquan, it was Daquan this, that's the reason you didn't play. So when it would have been easy, I imagine you had these thoughts like, nah, it was just the coach, that's why I didn't play. But you growing as a man and maturing a little bit, just being taking it on the chin, like, nah, I got to do some things better before I can even look outwards. So I definitely appreciate that. And one thing I'm kind of wondering, I was watching your film overseas, and you had a really good year. What adjustments to your game do you think you had to make playing in Italy?
Like, now, as we get to this age where we're older, like, a lot of the game is mental. It's 95% mental. The other 5% is probably skill, to be honest. And like I said, I wouldn't have been able to make it through that overseas season if it wasn't for my coach at Albany. Like I said, we had ups and downs, but like, as a person, I, you know, could never say anything bad about him. Like, he's somebody who really helped me grow and mature as a person, both on and off the court. Like, he was somebody who taught me, like, it doesn't matter what you're going through in life, someone else is going through stuff. And, you know, you got to just stay consistent no matter what you're going through.
Yeah. What is it like now for you to be able to represent, you know, Division III as a whole on a national stage like this with the TBT tournament?
Definitely a great feeling, to be honest. But I feel like this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, kind of show, like, it doesn't matter what level you're at, D1, D2, D3, mm-hmm. basketball.
Facts.
If you find a way to put together the right group of guys that are willing to share the ball, willing to come together as one, anybody can beat anybody on any given day. Like I said, you see in this tournament, there are a lot of one seeds that have been knocked off to quote-unquote teams that aren't supposed to win. But
yeah.
This is why we play the game.
Yeah.
And being able to represent a bunch of D3 guys, not only for the 12 guys that are on this roster, but for every, you know, Division III player that's out there, it's definitely a great feeling.
Right.
Before we move to rapid fire, I do want to mention this to the viewers. Like, Vaquan is a great basketball player, and at the TBT game, you didn't probably play as many minutes as you wanted to, but the one that can, again, not worry too much about, like, oh, Daquan's not having his best game.
Right,
it's time to sit and pout. Like,
right.
Nah, it's time to lift my guys up even more. So we locked in, though, in a few hours. But we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire, starting 5 edition. Let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
I think I'm ready right now.
All right, so first rapid fire question. Top, you can name multiple if you want, but who are the top Philly hoopers that, in your eyes, like, are the best in the area that never made it to the NBA?
I would probably have to say Quade Green. Although he had a short stint in the NBA G League, I would probably say him. There's another guy, Brandon Austin, probably about 6'9", 6'10", guard. Mm-hmm. Really could do it all, athletic. And then there was one more guard who was really good. I'd probably have to say De'Ron Russell, who played at Imhotep. Went on to play at Rhode Island, had a great college career. But now he's having much success overseas in a great league. So I would probably say those are the three top guys from Philly that never made it, that probably could have, you know.
Is the kid that played at Rhode Island, is that Fats Russell? Is that his name?
Russell,
he's OD,
yes,
bro.
Yes, 100%.
Next rapid fire question. Best Philly cheesesteak spot in Philadelphia.
I got to go with D'Alessandro's. If not D'Alessandro's, you definitely just got to stop in the hood and get one of those hood cheesesteaks.
All right, bet. And then last question. Favorite just basketball memory of yours?
Favorite basketball memory of mine definitely has to be winning the championship at Arcadia in 2019. Like I said, that was a great feeling just because of how it happened. It was the first championship in school history. And then on top of that, we were all on top of the scout, in which we ended up blowing the team out by 30 or 40 points. And the biggest, which was the greatest feeling of that, was seeing everybody that was on that roster be able to get into the game in the championship game. So it was a great feeling just watching everyone be able to check into the game and stuff like that. So that was great.
And if that was your school's first conference championship, then that means that was the first NCAA tournament too.
Absolutely.
And you guys got your first.
And we got the first NCAA win in school history, yep, against NJCC in the first round. We're actually the underdogs, obviously, not playing in as good of a conference as maybe some of the other teams that, you know, were in the NCAA tournament. But after that first game, we definitely, like, put Arcadia on the map, and that school is, like, definitely respected now.
Now, are you Jackie or the GOAT at Arcadia?
100%. 110%. No question.
I respect that, bro.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But we're going to end this episode below starting 5 edition.
Okay.
So if you're a coach, assemble a lineup 1 through 5.
Okay.
Who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the, like, guys that you just liked playing with. So
okay.
It could be anybody throughout your career.
Okay.
1 through 5, and just talk a little about, like, where you played with them and why you thought they were tough.
I would probably go starting point guard, Tone Carr. Played with him in high school. Played with him actually all my life growing up, here and there in some AAU tournaments. Really good, calm, composed point guard, who knows how to read the game. And he's a person who all his life probably lived, never get too high in the wins and too low in the losses. There would be games where we're up 15, he's still on us. There would be games where we're down 10 with maybe 4 or 5 minutes to go, and he's still trying to rally us up and get us going with belief that we could win the game. At the 2 guard, this is where it gets tough.
I have some ideas.
It starts to get tough from here, man. Oh, man. Can I insert myself in the 2?
Yeah, you could.
Be anybody else? All right, I'll definitely take that, you know, 2 guard spot. Like I said, I feel like it doesn't matter what team I'm on. I get, you know, you could plug me in at any position or tell me whatever you need me to do, I'm going to go out there and do it. But with a great point guard like Tone Carr, I feel like he's somebody who will find me every possession that I'm on.
And it's lighting
it
up.
He's a passer. It's going in every time. I know it's going in. He knows it's going in. At the 3 position, I'll probably go with Brandon Austin. I didn't play with him much, but like I said, a guard, he could play the 1, 2, or 3, probably could slot him to the 4 just because of his height, athletic, could really score the ball. So I would probably put him at the 3. At the four, I would probably have to go with a really good friend of mine. It's two people, either Paul Newman or Lamar Stevens. Both strong bodies, both physical specimens. They're going to bring a lot to the defensive end, and they're going to stay on you the whole game. And you definitely need that on your team.
But you got to pick one, though.
I'll pass on that. I guess one of them got to be the sixth man. That's crazy since they can't start at the five. And then at the five, I'll go with Mike Watkins. Mike Watkins is somebody that I didn't really get to play with him much, but the times that I did play with him, like in the Brotherly Love tournament, like the energy, effort, and tenaciousness that he plays with throughout the whole game is just amazing. Like, it's definitely unmatched. Like, he's blocking shots, he's running the floor, and he's not doing that for possessions at a time. He's doing that throughout the course of 40 minutes or however long the game is. He's out there making sure that he's getting his job done. So,
well, that's a tough lineup, bro. Y'all may make some noise and some cash money. You absolutely might need to make that team.
We might need to put that team together. Four to five guys in the starting lineup. We actually played in a Danny Rump together last year, and we won the championship. That was our first year in that pro-am, and we won it, and we're looking to run it back.
That's tough.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you hopping on.
Yes, sir.
No, it's time to go get a dub.
Yes,
bro.
Sir. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Yes, sir, bro.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.